Good morning. My name is Michelle McLeod, and I want to welcome you to our show, Mornings with Michelle. We're here in Fallbrook, California, at Southwest Boulder and Stone. It's about 11 o'clock on Friday, April 1st, 2016. I've got a little bit of information I want to give you. First of all, we're going to be opening a new yard, a new Southwest Boulder and Stone yard in North County, San Diego County, in Escondido, right off the 78 at the 15, and we are very excited about it. I think it'll be really good for the Rancho Bernardo, for the Escondido guys, for guys that didn't want to drive all the way up here to Fallbrook. Okay, today is April 1st, so I have what I think is pretty good April Fool's story. On April 1st in 1980, there was a TV station in Milton, Massachusetts. Milton's about 10 miles south of Boston. And they aired a fake news bulletin on their 6 p.m. news reporting that Great Blue Hill, which was a hill, sort of a mountain in Milton, had erupted and was spraying lava and ash onto nearby homes. And I guess they showed this footage of this lava flowing down a hillside. And according to the reporter, the lava flow had been caused by a geological chain reaction set off by the eruption of Mount St. Helens, which had been a week earlier. And so I kind of want to sit here and say, Mount St. Helens, Milton, Massachusetts. We're talking about an entire country, a continent in between the two. So if you've been thinking, was it really going to happen? But anyway, at the end of the bulletin, the reporter held up a card that said, April Fool. But unfortunately, by then, some of the Milton residents had begun to flee their homes. They called the Massachusetts Department of Civil Defense and wanted to know if they really should evacuate. So the next day, the producer of the 6 o'clock news, whose name was, and I'm not kidding, his name was Homer Silly, was fired by the station for his, quote, failure to exercise good news judgment. So sorry, that he's my April Fool. Okay, this morning we're going to talk about ways that contractors can provide additional value to his or her client. How can they get the best bang for their buck? And I'm thinking that including boulders in a project is probably one of the best ways to do that. You might ask, why would you add them? What do you do? How do you do it? What shapes do they come in? What colors? What sizes? How heavy are they? How are they delivered? How are they set? What kind of access? Anyway, lots of questions. So I want to answer some of these questions this morning. First question, why would you add them? What can they do? What do they do to the landscape? Well, boulders actually can create a really good focal point in the landscape. Your eye is really drawn to them. The addition of the boulders allows you really to integrate rock and different kinds of stone into the landscape with using plants as sort of a supporting group. They're really a perfect foil. Boulders are a perfect foil for plants. It allows you to balance the hardscape with the softscape. Important things to remember, and this is probably primary. Boulders are heavy. They're backbreaking heavy. They are 165 pounds per square foot for granite. Most of these boulders that we have are granite. So a 2-footer is going to weigh probably between 400, 450 pounds. So that's going to be a little bit of a sticky point, unless you got a good crew and a good way to move them, which we'll talk about in a minute. What shapes do they come in? They can be round, they can be oblong, they can be square, they can be angular. Pretty much every shape you can think of, we have a boulder that'll fit it. We have probably 40 different kinds on site here in Fallbrook. What colors are available? You can go from, pick a color and I have it. So red, white, blue, green, yellow, purple, pink, plus all of those colors mixed together as well. So a huge variety of colors. What sizes work? Size of boulders depends almost entirely on what you've designed into the landscape. You've got to keep scale in mind. You don't want to put a 1-foot boulder in a large landscape because it's going to get lost. So again, I think I have to fall back on common sense. Use common sense and an eye for design. Have an eye for design and sort of step back. See what you like. You can look at other landscapes. Drive around. See what people have done that you like. Anyway, how are they delivered? Boulders are delivered for a small contractor or a contractor just has a truck. We can put small ones in the back of his truck or her truck. The larger boulders usually necessitate either a bigger vehicle or we can do it with an end dump or a crane or a flatbed on a pallet. It's pretty doable any which way you want. It's just, you have to be able to tell us what your access is like and how, you know, again, how big a boulder you want. How are they set, or we call it placement. How are they placed? Well, the smaller size boulders, anything from a 1 foot to 2 to 2.5, can be set with a rock dolly. One of the caveats about the rock dolly is it's preferable if you have a fairly level situation. You definitely don't want to see the dolly getting loose going down a hill carrying a 400 to 500 pound boulder. I've actually seen contractors roll boulders as far as they can and then actually use big sticks, and I mean big thick sticks, or 4x4s or bigger, to lever boulders into place. There's a will, there's a way, definitely. If you're lucky enough to have a small bobcat or a small loader, that works great as well. Or again, if you want to go the big boy boulders, you go with a big boy crane. It's a big toy and it's fun to use, but obviously there's a cost involved. The other thing the crane has to have absolutely is access. We have to be able to get the crane close enough to the area where you're putting the boulders. So if you've got a backyard that's got a huge hill, we're probably not going to be able to put big boulders back there. Okay, so access. Obviously for a bobcat or a dolly, you need a big enough gate to be able to get in the back or the front. And the crane needs a drivable area. So we're talking about crane has a footprint like a concrete truck, a cement truck. Problems that you might encounter. One of the ones I think that has happened to us before is there are certain boulders that have what's called a patina on the outside. It's the process of oxidation of the minerals within the boulder, and when the water mixes with it, it causes oxidation and you kind of get what looks like rust, and it can wash off. So you definitely don't want to put a boulder that's going to oxidize right next to a sidewalk, a concrete sidewalk, or heaven forbid a French white pool, because it'll stain it absolutely. But again, if you just talk with us, let us know how you're using the product. We can certainly walk you through the issues. The most important thing about boulders, about adding these boulders to your menu, is that you make it look natural. You just don't want to look like I drove up and dumped all the boulders in a pile and then walked away, because there's no added value to that. Also, we want to bury the boulders about a third of the way. You want them to look like when you finish the job, that they've been there long before you were there, long before the house was built. So bury them about at the third, and then also pair different sized boulders together. And when I don't mean pair, put them in threes. So you're going to have a 1 foot, a 2 foot, and maybe a 3 foot boulder, then maybe a 1 foot off by itself or a 3 foot off by itself. So place them in odd numbers, not in even numbers. But I do think that adding boulders to your repertoire will give you the most added value for your client. It's a relatively simple way to extend your business umbrella and really to add that value for you to provide for your clients. On another tangent, we did an interview with Peter Sanchez, who is our salesman in the Coachella Valley. We did it last week, and I wanted to share some of that information with you. The desert, I guess you can ask what better place to sell boulders and rock, because he is a master at it. He's in tune with all of the HOAs and with the contractors in the desert, and there probably isn't a question he couldn't answer about who's doing what in the valley and what material is good to use. So here it is. So Peter, I have a couple of questions about the desert. I know that the Coachella Valley is a big area. Give me some information about the Coachella Valley geographic portions.
Well, Coachella is really broken into sort of two sections, where you have Palm Springs, which is sort of its own entity or identifies itself by being different. And then you have the rest of the communities in the valley that have the HOAs and associations that kind of determine what types of materials homeowners are allowed to use. So those are a bit more monotone when you go into their associations, and they're more price driven, where Palm Springs embraces a little bit of the modernism movement. They just embrace uniqueness.
Well, yeah, so you're telling me that basically, in a nutshell, the Palm Springs area is, like you say, it's unique, if they're independent. One area might be modern, and then the other ones might be something else, might be Spanish, something
Absolutely.
Like that. Okay, so there's would you say more diversity in the design in Palm Springs? And then when you get out further toward the Rancho Mirage and the other end of the valley, it's more, well, I won't say Rancho Mirage's tracks, but you get into a lot of the tracks in the Indio area where it's more, like you say, monotonal or...
Correct.
Okay.
It is very diverse in Palm Springs and in the older areas of Rancho Mirage before they had... In the communities that don't have the gates around them, okay. That don't have the HOAs that are really governing what they can put down.
Got it. And are you seeing, is there a lot of turf removal out there? I mean, obviously they've been impacted by the drought as well. And do you see a lot of changes out there recently?
There is. There's a lot of turf removals. Just about everybody's doing the 25,000 square foot areas to do. So they're breaking them down into phases to be able to get the rebates, to be able to save as much as they can.
Explain that to me. I mean, on this side of the mountain, as I call it, you know, each house gets, I don't know, 1,000 square feet or whatever. Are there parameters that they do for the rebates?
There are. For residential homes, there are 10,000 square foot
limits.
Okay. But for country clubs and golf courses, it's a 25,000 square foot limit per phase, so they can break it down. Okay. Into phases, and every time there's money from the water district, mm-hmm. then they can put in a new application for another section.
Got it. So not everybody, like in the very beginning in the LA area, there were some places that, I think it was the Miller Beer Company, got like $100,000 and sort of, there were complaints that they were favoring the big boys or the guys that got in there first rather than the small people. And let's talk a little bit also about what you see in the design in boulders, you know, rubble, cobble. What do you see? Where are people going in that respect?
There's a lot of boulders. I think they're starting to use them more than they were before with plants. And now the rubble, a lot of people are starting to use like a 3 to 6 inch size rubble, where I think in the past a lot of people were using just the decomposed granites and trying to lay it down, not really making much of a design. But now that the communities are really changing over and they have the ability to kind of make their own designs, with the exception of the HOAs, where you have to get pre-approved plans or pre-approved drawings and designs, it still gives them a little bit of freedom to kind of make what they want in their, and especially in their backyards. Their backyard is not such a big deal unless it butts up against the golf course.
So let's talk a little bit about using contractors. It sounds like contractors in the Valley, and I know you work with a lot of them, are very knowledgeable about the product, about the different products, about the different sizes, about how deep you want to lay material, about if you want to use an underlayment or if you want to use a weed barrier fabric. Why should you use a contractor?
I think one of the biggest reasons is you'll have the right amount of product for your project. You'll have the right product also for your project, not only in the cobbles and pebbles and all the aggregates, but they really can help you in incorporating some plants to just really make it stand out. I've seen contractors come from sometimes Northern California down to the desert, try to incorporate some of those plants, and it just really doesn't work because they don't have the knowledge to do it. And oftentimes you end up paying another contractor or a consultant to come in and help you change those plants. So I think starting with the right contractor for your project is really key to saving some headache, at least in the long run.
I do agree, absolutely, that we get a lot of times we get people who over-order and then they have to sit on, you know, half a ton or, you know, a big pile of rock, and what are you going to do with that? The other thing I think that's very key about contractors is that they know which boulder fits with things and they know what sizes are good. Retail or residential guy come in and ask for a 3-foot boulder and really think that he can move it by himself, but a 3-foot boulder is about 1,800 pounds, and you know, I think that unless you're Peter, who's a bigger boy, it's going to be really tough to move that around, or you're going to break your back, one or the other. So there's a lot of benefits, definitely, to using contractors. Before the show, Peter and I were talking about, obviously, topics, and he told me a great story I want him to tell.
Well, I have a customer who's actually a law firm, someone that I know, who's doing a renovation and decided not to go with a contractor or a knowledgeable contractor, whether licensed or not, I'm not certain, but it wasn't someone whom we recommended or we normally work with, and it ended up costing not only time, backed up the project by 2 days, and had to reorder material on three separate occasions because they couldn't figure out their coverages. So that not only is it a headache, it backs up the schedule, but it also costs you more money in terms of we're charging a delivery charge every time, and we tried to be as helpful as we could, but it ends up costing the end consumer, which is our customer, a little bit more.
Ultimately, yeah. So he had 15 tons delivered in three separate sections. So he had three deliveries instead of having one at 15. So,
correct.
Anyway, I think it's pretty clear that it's nice to use people who are in the know, whether it's product or labor or whatever, but it makes your life easier in the long run. You do have to write a check, there's no question, but you get what you pay for.
Absolutely.
Okay, that wraps it up for the interview with Peter Sanchez. I think you can probably tell that he is very knowledgeable about the desert, about the valley. I think if you're a contractor or a resident, no matter what, Peter can help with the coverages, tell you what you need, help you find work. He's just a man that can do it all. If you do have questions, though, you can reach Peter at psanchez@southwestboulder.com. Or me at marketing@southwestboulder.com. Last couple things is we've got some good self-guided tours coming up this weekend. The Los Angeles one in Los Angeles. There's one in San Diego on Saturday. And there's the Desert Hort Society on Sunday the 3rd. But again, you can always find us on Facebook or visit us again at the website southwestboulder.com. And we look forward to seeing you next Friday at 11. Thanks.